Today in the show we have flash loans to get ape, crypto disclosures, CoinWeb interoperability between Ethereum and Bitcoin, and more. I'm your host, Maurício Magaldi, and this is BlockDrops, your weekly digest on blockchain for business. These news are not a form of endorsement, sponsorship, or encouragement for consumption, and are meant for educational purposes only. This week we saw two major innovations from Web3 come to life together in something really interesting. One is flash loans. Flash loans is a modality of DeFi, decentralized finance, in which a loan can be borrowed and paid back within the same time frame as the blockchain requires to record a new block, which means that within that time frame, a user or a smart contract can go and deposit collateral, take a loan, do something with it, repay the loan back, get the collateral back. That within the time frame that the blockchain takes to record a new block. So the second thing that happened is the airdrop. Airdrop is a feature where you can program a smart contract that will then acknowledge some sort of criteria and then, quote-unquote, drop tokens, NFTs or cryptocurrencies, into those wallets that meet the criteria. And that is called the airdrop. You can do that for launching any type of product. Well, Bored Apes, Yuga Labs, launched last week, and we reported on it, the Ape token. And these tokens would be airdropped into wallets that had ownership of the Ape NFTs. So what happens is one user or entity or programmer wrote a smart contract that took a flash loan, bought 6 NFTs of tokens from a vault, meaning they weren't owned by anyone but the vault, had those NFTs of the Bored Apes on their wallet by the time the airdrop happened, sold back to the vault those NFTs, paid back the loan, and took out the collateral, earning the corresponding ape tokens in the process. That all within the time frame of a single block being generated in the Ethereum blockchain. So imagine that you have some funding, you build this whole structure operation, buy the NFTs, get the ape tokens equivalent or corresponding to those NFTs, return the NFTs, pay back your loan, and now you have ape pretty much by just paying the whole gas or the gas fee, the operating Ethereum fee for that operation in the process. So pretty unique proposition between a device that is a DeFi device where you can do multiple operations within the time frame of a block, and then the NFT airdrops or the token airdrops for the Ape NFTs all built together in this sort of composable way, right? Composability is one of the largest primitives, or one of the most important primitives of Web3, and now seeing this in action between an airdrop that was announced and then the whole construction of this device for borrowing the money, buying the NFT, getting the airdrop, returning the tokens, paying back the loan, and only paying the gas in the process is pretty unique. Of course, this was only possible because Yuga Labs, different from previous airdrops that usually look in the past to see who had the criteria to be met, you know, a few days back or a week back, did the airdrop based on whoever had the NFTs at the moment of the airdrop. So that made it possible for this whole operation to take place within an Ethereum block because it was instantaneous, right? At the moment the airdrop happened, around the moment the airdrop happened, everything in the flash loan could operate around that. So pretty wild, pretty risky, but pretty interesting too, because there's, of course, this huge degree of innovation that comes with these types of contracts. You can read the details on the link that I shared, but it's pretty amazing that we're seeing this degree of innovation. It doesn't come without controversy, though. Some people think that this is a steal. Some people think that this is awesome. Some people think that this should be prevented because, of course, they didn't actually participate in the community because they didn't own the word ape, etc., which I think are all valid points, but I think the focus here is to understand what made it possible. So it's composing things based on the Web3 primitives. So there's programmability, and of course there is composability put together, and now in ownership, now put together to this huge effect of a flash loan that now allowed this user or wallet or group of people to actually capture Ape without necessarily owning that NFT by the time of the airdrop. We argue here in this podcast that one of the three major unlocks for Web3 massive adoption is regulatory integration, meaning that the regulators would need to be playing on chain, if you will, to actually make it possible for everything that we do in Web3 to be more acceptable by wider society, and then, of course, further adopted. And I'm not the one, not just the one looking into this, but Chris Brummer, Georgetown Law professor, author, and lecturer, wrote an article on Medium. You have the link on the episode notes, about the potential of using Web3 technology to actually perform and record the disclosures with a few very interesting use cases. The proposition goes to disclosure NFTs, disclosure DAOs, and disclosure DIDs. So initially, the idea proposed by the article is that NFTs are used to record the information instead of getting filed in some old system from the SEC or any other equivalent in other countries, because of course you can draw parallels between the US and any other country that has a regulatory or securities regulator in the jurisdiction. And the opportunity to use NFTs as recipients for the discovery data is to have the data on chain, right? So if you are an entity and you're recording your disclosures on an NFT, that becomes available even if the data itself is not on chain, but the record that ties to your regulatory reporting data goes to the blockchain, and that becomes transparent and auditable, which are characteristics of the blockchains. The author even proposes that something like IPFS or Filecoin can be used to store the off-chain, per se, disclosures, right? But one thing that is really wild in this thought process is not only the disclosures could be embedded on an NFT, but the interaction between someone and the disclosure could also be recorded, meaning that little by little, executives, regulators, and even investors could amass on-chain credentials by going through the disclosures, reading, going through some sort of certification test, and that result gets recorded on the NFT. And little by little, these participants would then become more knowledgeable, and these credentials would be on chain and allow them to do all sorts of things like have access to specific meetings, vote on specific matters, become really known for the expertise given that interaction with these disclosures. That could even apply, say, for industry analysts that are analyzing the results of the companies that provide those reports, right? So if you get that collection of tokens, that means that your wallet, which could be non-transferable, that could be your online credential or your Web3 credential for becoming maybe an accredited investor, right? So that's pretty wild potential. And I really like this. It's a different angle than the one I was going for. Of course, the second one is the DAO, turning that an organizational effort to actually interact on and off chain to determine standards, to determine what is required, what is optional, to determine whether a new level of industry or participants are going to be required to disclosure. And this becomes a more democratic process. And of course, the disclosures could also be stored as part of the DAO, and the companies and individuals disclosing that information can also take part in voting for whatever the DAO is going to propose to continue to push forward the standards in the industry. So that's what Chris calls the disclosure DAOs. And of course, the DID. The DID is the decentralized identity. That means you can have all your data off-chain, and that ties into an on-chain decentralized ID. And instead of having every piece of the data stored in there, you just have the ID, and whoever manages that ID has the potential to actually open that key to other people to access the off-chain data, which also creates a lot of efficiency. So different angle to this problem, but pretty interesting. I'll recommend you guys read. The link is on the description today. Early in this podcast, we were very obsessed with the concept of interoperability, because it is one of those things that not even public blockchains were able to achieve. We then saw the emergence of the layer 2s of multiple of these blockchains. For instance, Lightning Network is a layer 2 from the Bitcoin blockchain. And then on the Ethereum ecosystem, you have a whole list of polygons and Optimism and Arbitrum and others. There's Cosmos and Polkadot, who are actually thought as a layer 1, layer 2 architecture from the get-go. But these are interoperable between the same standards, right? EVMs and other standards are what support the interaction between a layer 2 and a layer 1. Now, CoinWeb finally got an operational production level interoperability device between Bitcoin and Ethereum, which are two different blockchain standards, and now they're getting this to market. So the idea here is that you have an asset or something that is running on Ethereum, and if you need something from the Bitcoin network, be it maybe a deposit on Bitcoin, you can use the CoinWeb interoperability device to actually perform operations between these two blockchains. And you will be able to see what's going on between these blockchains through the CoinWeb Explorer. This is pretty wild, because I think the first section of the industry to actually benefit from it is DeFi, right? Right now you have wrapped Bitcoin somehow that you can use on the Ethereum side of things, but it's the opposite is not true. So seeing that CoinWeb now allows for some form of interoperability between these two things, which could be massive in terms of DeFi and maybe even in terms of like IoT, thinking that you can pay in any of these two currencies between each component device, that will be pretty wild to see happening. So I'm looking forward to see more use cases that will be built on top of this new solution. And maybe we'll see more and more DeFi protocols taking advantage of using a counterpart in Bitcoin, because if Bitcoin is to become the store of value, then maybe Ethereum is money. And seeing those two things operate in tandem would be pretty interesting, and it expands a lot what the DeFi industry can build. And in a week packed full of news, here's more. Coinbase now will demand recipient data to be shared in Canada, Singapore, and Japan. Time Magazine is now accepting Ape for subscriptions. A blockchain games consortium now gathers Republic, Galaxy Digital, and Alameda Research. Tennis player Naomi Osaka is now FTX's newest crypto ambassador. Hyundai Card now has an NFT rewards program. Decentraland hosts Metaverse Fashion Week. Goldman Sachs will offer crypto OTC options. There's an Outback restaurant Brazilian wedding in Decentraland. Yuga Labs is now valued at $4 billion after the seed round. Pods Finance announced their option factory is now available in Avalanche, BSC, Phantom, and Optimism. Australian bank ANZ is issuing an Australian dollar stablecoin. MetaMask announced a DAO with potential airdrops in the future. Bill Murray announces an NFT series about his real-life stories. Oil company ExxonMobil will now mine Bitcoin using Exxon Natural Gas. fund BlackRock is now studying crypto products due to client demand. Russia announced that they're going to get paid in Bitcoin for oil and gas. Qatar announces a new regulation exploring the potentials of digital banking and digital currencies. Australia, Malaysia, Singapore, and South Africa are now in a multi-CBDC pilot with the BIS. MIT is the newest partner of Bank of England for the CBDC studies. Solid World uses ReFi, regenerating finance, to clean the environment. Coinbase announced Coinbase Pay, their new payments solution. Brazilian social tech Ribbon announced that they're becoming a DAO. And Gucci now styles famous PFPs such as the Bored Apes. The Block Drops podcast is available on Anchor FM, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcasts, Numis, and iCollab. You can reach out to us through Instagram at BlockDropsPodcast, on Twitter at BlockDropsPod, and via email BlockDropsPodcast@gmail.com. Yay! Shoutouts today to the people who share the links you find in the episode notes. Laura Shin, Bruno Diniz, Jason Janowitz, Matthew Dunn-Miles, Simon Taylor, Leandro Pereira, Maya Aloy, Thiago Amaral, Brasil NFT, Mil Milanovic, Rob Silva, Derek Graham, Charles Atkins, Fabio Chiesini, Kai Sheffield, Yvette Bozinova, Maria Gonçalves, Jeff Prestes, Marcos Gurgel, and Jamie Burke. Don't forget to leave a rating on your favorite player. This is all for today. Stay rare. Stay weird. LFG.